The Third Grade Conference, Lecture 21, Another Look at the Structure and Context of the Stories of the Hebrew Scriptures. Here I am indebted to an anthroposophist of the 20th century named Valentin Tomberg, who did quite a number of esoteric studies of many, many different subjects. He wrote quite a bit about, as he called them, the Old Testament stories. And he provided, though a lot of his work is very difficult, very obscure, very arcane, and meant to be so, I found as I was looking for ways to approach these stories in grade three, that he gave a very wonderful structural approach, which made a lot of things fall in place and helped me get a feeling for, well, this is what I want to accomplish in the first third of the year, the second third of the year, and the last segment of the year. So I happily share this with you and see if it, as you study the book yourself and become more at home in it, if this speaks to you as well. So he, among others who have studied these books, also said, you know, don't worry so much about the stories that go up to Noah and the flood and whatever shortly follows, that the real beginning is Abraham. And we could say that with Abraham, the way Tomberg puts it, we have a figure who is able to see God and hear God. Certainly not always understand God, not know what he is being told and why, and we will see this figuring very poignantly in the story of the sacrifice of his son Isaac. But nonetheless, God reveals himself in a very full way to Abraham. And it is Abraham who recognizes that the voice that is speaking to him, the being who in one way or another appears in a revelatory way, this is an entirely different being, a different category of being, of existence entirely, than the gods of his forefathers. So with this, Tomberg says, the stories of the Hebrew Scriptures really begin. And we have Abraham, we have his son Isaac, we have his son Jacob, we have Jacob's son Joseph. And we have this, you know, who begat. And so we have here an hereditary line, and it comes to an end with Joseph. We don't hear about Joseph's son. We don't see any more of this direct bloodline figuring. So Abraham is the beginning, Joseph is the end. The end of what? The end of those who have a direct contact with the Godhead, who need no mediation. They're not even priests. They are just individuals who clearly are filled with the essence of the divine, and therefore their families and finally many others follow them. With each of these figures, however, we see greater impedances, number one, in their own ability to understand what God is trying to convey to them, in their difficulties in necessarily following what God has in mind for them, and also increasing difficulties in making others realize what they have to contribute to the world. And this kind of progress or regression, however one wants to see it, this is what gets things underway. And I'd say this is really the essence of autumn, of the Michaelic side of the Hebrew Scriptures really manifests in these wonderful stories. So these are the beings generally spoken of, the figures spoken of as the patriarchs, the fathers. And certainly they have wives who also are important figures in some of the stories. Very important in one of the stories, as I will show you, actually in two. So that's the end of the first phase. Then we have Moses, and Moses is a kind of bridge figure because we are told right at the very end of his life, in a very typically terse, laconic statement, that Moses was the last man to see God. And certainly we know that Moses hears God from the many things that God tells him. So here, Moses, although not directly in the lineage of Abraham, not sharing in that direct bloodline, though undoubtedly a good deal of it probably did course through his veins, but he's presented as quite a separate figure in many ways, he nonetheless is able to have this final experience. And this is why I say try to get to Moses, or maybe even finish his story, by the time winter sets in. And then we have the second phase that Tom Berg describes, and this is the period of those who could hear God but not see God. So now God becomes an auditory experience. And now, in order for those who cannot see God to be able to transmit what they hear in a way that it can be understood and perhaps even imitatively taken up by others, they take on a priestly role, and they bring ritual, and they bring a kind of imagery, though of course the Israelites are iconoclastic. God is not to be seen anymore, so he can't be revealed. He can't be shown as an image. Yet nonetheless, they're obviously bringing a kind of ritualism, particularly through the ark, through the word, the auditory message of God. So here we have figures who are not as prominent, not as fully fleshed out in every way as the patriarchs were, but we have figures like Aaron, the brother of Moses, who was not able to share fully in his brother's revelations, but was certainly well equipped to lead the Israelites into the promised land as their first priest. We have Joshua. Now, I should mention, in King James and in most biblical translations, the priests of Israel are called the judges. They were individuals who could exercise judgment. That is to say, they were able to weigh things and balance things. We see this strongly in, famously in the figure of Solomon, but it's already there in these individuals. You'll take this up when you deal with weight, particularly in teaching practical skills later on to the third graders. One wouldn't imagine a figure like Samson, famously known for his poor judgment, to be one of the judges, but there he is. And the last of the judges is Samuel, who is the last one to hear God's voice directly, the last of the Israelites to hear this. And even in his case, he's not sure what it is that he is hearing. It's a very beautiful story and a real picture of the ending of something. And it is Samuel who is chosen to do the difficult task of ending the priesthood's rule over the Israelites, ending what we could call the theocratic stage of the life of the Israelites, and opening then the way for the kings. And then we have the three great kings, Saul, David, and Solomon, who could neither see God nor hear God. They now are acting out of the purely human, and therefore they are very flawed individuals. They make mistakes, big mistakes, tragic mistakes. In fact, we could say that really, certainly Saul and David, and to some extent Solomon, are all tragic figures. And we have to think then of not so really long after them, the rise of the drama of tragedy in Greek life, and the stories of the great kings with their flaws and their failings. So here are sort of archetypes of the king who must rule out of the ideal human impulse and cannot always measure up to that. Though certainly David, with his poetic inspiration in the Psalms, and Solomon with the great plan and structure of Solomon's temple, they show that in their sleep, we might say, in a dreamlike way, they still are able to have a connection with divine impulses. But it can't come directly, and it certainly does not come to them in their everyday wakeful life. So these are the three great impulses. Those, the patriarchs who could see and hear God, the priests or judges who could only hear God, and the kings who could neither see God nor hear God, and now must work out of being purely human. But there's a fourth category as well, and I would add this, and these are the prophets, whose life and work overlap that of the kings. And these prophets are, by and large, wonderful representatives of the choleric temperament. We think of them as very fiery figures. And like all good cholerics, they say, scratch a choleric and you get a melancholic. And their pronouncements, their visions, their prophetic sense of the future is often a very dark one. They see an ending coming for the grandeur of the Israelites, but they also see the possibility of the beginning of something else, which they can only present in a pictorial way. So we could say the future is streaming towards these prophets. Who else, if I told you, feels the future streaming towards them? The third grader, exactly. So in the same way that the patriarchs speak to the immersion in the divine experienced by the very young child, the kindergartners who love to talk about God all the time, and this sense of being connected to the divine, especially through hearing, but not fully immersed anymore, that's a bit like the primary school child. And then this sense of having to stand on one's own without the support of the divine at all in a conscious way, that's a bit like the adolescent, the teenager, isn't it? Whereas the prophet is kind of the adult. In fact, some of those prophets come pretty close to being atheists. They wonder, after all of the disastrous events that befall the Israelites, is God still there? Does he still care? Was he ever there? Does he really exist at all? The prophets at this time, you know, 600, 500 BC, they are speaking like modern human beings, doubting everything, very existential. And I would say not every class may be ready for the prophets. Some classes, however, really need to hear about them. Some classes need to hear about one or two. Some classes need to hear about three or four. Some of them wait the whole year just to hear those voices. So this is a very powerful thing. And once again, it's really in your hands and your judgment. If you go to patriarchs, priests, kings, you've done a great service for your class. That's plenty. But if you feel your class needs, right at the end of the year, a touch of that prophetic spirit, that's also a really wonderful thing. So this is, again, the work of Valentin Tomberg in his books called Studies of the Old Testament. Not so easy to find anymore, but they do exist. And you might want to look into that. As I say, I found it tremendously helpful. And I will keep referring to it as we go into specific stories, which comes up in our next lecture. We are going to plunge into the meaning and the content of the Old Testament Hebrew Scriptures, Hebrew Bible.